You're listening to the COVID-19 Update, a podcast from the CSIS Global Health Policy Center focused on the science and policy implications of the outbreak. I'm Andrew Schwartz of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and I'm joined by my colleague, Steve Morrison, to discuss the latest on COVID-19.
I'm delighted today to be joined again by a good friend, Philip Zelikow, White Burkett Miller, Professor of History at the University of Virginia. Welcome, Philip.
Oh, glad to be here, Steve.
It's great to have you back with us. Philip, since early this year, 2021, has been running what is called the COVID Commission Planning Group. We've had the good fortune of being connected to that effort in a variety of ways, both CSIS institutionally, but also personally involved in trying to help in a variety of ways. Philip, you came earlier in the course of this, about mid-year, to talk to us about this. So now we're getting towards the end of 2021. It's a very good moment, I think, to sort of pause and reflect. And let's start on the most basic element. Is a national commission on the pandemic a good idea? And if so, why?
It's a good question, Steve. I didn't take it for granted that it was a good idea. Creating this commission planning group wasn't even my idea. A group of foundations thought it was obvious there should be a commission, and so they recruited me to run a group to plan one because it would be a very large investigative enterprise and it needed to be planned. But I didn't come into it assuming that it was a good idea. I have now concluded that it's absolutely essential as a way of taking stock of this enormous, sprawling crisis that has covered the whole country and the whole world, and that raises so many interesting questions about just what did happen and why, and how can we gain the insights to do much better in coping with, not just with a future pandemic, but coping with giant emergencies like this. Because the United States has not done very well with this emergency. I don't think your listeners may fully realize it, but we've done worse with this pandemic than we did in the pandemic of 1918, the great flu pandemic everyone's heard of. If you use excess mortality as your number, which is the most reliable number, not the, quote, COVID-19 death number, but excess mortality. Excess mortality from 1918 pandemic, United States, 675,000. Excess mortality in the United States from this pandemic, probably now over 1 million. Then people could say, yes, but that 675 in 1918 was in a population one-third the size of this one. Yes, I would answer, but this particular disease was only about one-fourth as deadly as the influenza of 1918. So if you kind of take those numbers into account, our performance in this pandemic, with all our magnificent edifice of healthcare, it's actually worse than our performance in the pandemic of 1918.
So let's pause for a moment. People can be hesitant about jumping into a commission at this moment in time for a couple of different reasons. One would be the house is on fire. We're in the midst of an emergency. Let's wait until it's less acute when we won't be distracting ourselves from the emergency response. That's one argument you hear. There's another that, well, we already know the fundamentals of the story. Look at the string of really quite impressive books that have come out over the course of this year, and there are many more coming. And all of the deep, incredible journalism that we've seen by some pretty remarkable writers who've gone on to win Pulitzer Prizes and the like in this period. How do we make the case that despite all of those considerations, it's most important that we do move ahead? The other argument that I want to put out there is the argument that we are just simply so toxically polarized at this moment. And look what happened with the January 6th commission and the way that it crashed and burned in Congress, that because this is so much, this has to be both backward looking and forward looking, inevitably you're going to reignite the rage of the Trump supporters, and that will become a burden for us. So how do we navigate those realities?
Let me take those three good questions in reverse order. So okay. Start with the polarization point. The fact of the polarization, the extreme polarization we have, is actually one of the most powerful arguments as to why the commission is essential. Everyone says, well, we've got these two information universes. We've got this extreme polarization. Well, instead of just wringing your hands about it, what's the best thing we could do as citizens to counter that? How about if we brought citizens from a variety of walks of life together to actually work together on understanding this with the most significant investigative effort these citizens coming together can muster? You answer the polarization with something that's the very opposite of polarization. And you just do that and you put it out there. Will it be attacked? Of course it will be attacked. But the best answer to polarization is not to feed it. The best answer to polarization is to offer an alternative to it and go out and do it. Don't just talk it, do it. Show it working,
so
show the investigation.
So along those lines, much of what you've been doing this year is demonstrating that you can bring together experts and have a pretty extensive and very diverse set of experts.
Yeah,
so you are creating legitimacy and credibility through that listening and exposure and engagement. And you're building a set of agendas built around you've broken this problem into four task forces. And you're lining up some of America's and beyond America most esteemed experts. So you're trying to transcend, my sense from watching you operate is you're trying to transcend polarization through very credible scientific gravitas.
Yes, and the best way to go about an investigation like this is not to try to play gotcha games with people. The best thing you can do is just reconstruct the choices they made. What information did they have around them when they were making these calls? What kind of values did they bring to the table? What kind of tools did they have available at given moments of time at their disposal? How did they sort through that? I think if people can simply kind of sit in the room and see how those choices were made on all sorts of issues at the state and local level, federal, global, they can judge for themselves, all right, what information didn't they have? What tools were just now obviously needed that weren't there? Where do I disagree with the values they brought to the table? Where do I disagree with the way those decisions were made? I think by getting that empathy by reconstructing choices and not just saying, well, that didn't turn out well, gotcha, and playing blame games with people, if you honestly try to understand the worlds they lived in and what the choices they made, I think you can learn an awful lot about what kind of world we need to build in order to make those choices easier or better in the future.
Okay, so let's move on then to the don't we know this story already question.
Yeah, and the answer is a lot of the books are good. We've read a lot of those books. It's good quality journalism. One of the things I learned directing the 9/11 Commission is a lot of people thought, oh, we know this story. We've been living in these newspaper stories about 9/11. And turned out, no, you didn't.
Right. So there's a deeper story.
I've experienced this again and again. Oh, yes. I think there are pieces of this story that actually are reasonably well understood, certain aspects of it from the books and the journalism. But if you actually go out and interview thousands of people across the United States who went through this, we've already discovered in interviewing hundreds of people that we think, and my colleagues agree with me, mostly this story is not well understood. There are pieces of it that are. And then there are a lot of situations where people get that there's an issue. Let's take, for example, everyone gets that there's an issue with testing. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, why exactly did that issue arise? And what's hard about solving that? And there it really then kind of gets very wispy. Everyone gets that there was a big problem and not enough tests, and we made some mistakes in what testing we did do at the outset. But like, well, why did that happen that way? Why did the CDC do X, Y, and Z? If you wanted to fix that, how would you try to go about fixing it? As soon as you start getting to those levels of analysis, right, then you're past the journalism and the newspaper stories and you're someplace else. And that's where the commission needs to take people. Because where a commission can really help the country is by understanding the past, you illuminate the future. Ask yourself this. Does anyone coming out of this crisis think the American public health system is fine? So surely, out of this crisis, we need to rethink the way we do our public health system. Okay? Well, gee, what would that look like? You know, silence. Silence from political leaders. Hard problem. The commission is the bridge to rethinking the American public health system.
And in terms of timing, why not wait until things have calmed down a little bit?
Yeah, it's a great idea, and maybe we could wait. But they might not calm down for years. This disease hasn't nearly run its course.
Right.
Even if we had vaccine doses right now for every person in the world, every person in the world wouldn't take it. They're going to be so this disease is going to run for a while. We're going to be preoccupied with it for a while.
But what's the urgency, do you think? What's the case for? Look, let's. I'm actually of the belief that we need to get moving as soon as we can. But you make the case. Like, why do we need to get this going in Q1, Q2 next year?
While the political momentum is there, while the pain is still there, while the memory of what happened resonates with so many hundreds of millions of people and they can relate to the story easily, mm-hmm. instead of it. What we've done over and over again with public health crisis is we go through cycles of panic, then neglect. Panic, then neglect. If you don't move to rebuild the system while the memory of the panic is fresh, you subside into neglect and wishful thinking about the future, and the momentum dissipates and attention shifts to something else, whatever the something else is going to be. There's also real hunger, too, for a commission to come together to offer some real-time guidance that actually might help provide insight in the transition of this crisis. I remember back when the 9/11 Commission was created, if you had asked the Bush administration, do you want a 9/11 commission? Actually, people did ask. The answer was no, it would be disruptive. Let's wait. But it turned out that the commission did enormously valuable work to the point President Bush appreciated what the commission had done and made sure and helped make sure that a lot of its recommendations were enacted. They hadn't wanted it in the first place. The war on terror is just getting going. It's really disruptive for you to investigate everything right now. And then Congress insisted. We did the work, and it turned out that the work was so valuable, including in a fresh understanding of what even happened on the morning of 9/11 itself, which actually had been badly garbled, mm-hmm. that I think there was a wide sense of relief that we had acted when we had acted to create the commission.
Let's talk a little bit about Congress. A very interesting recent development, which you've been tied to as in thinking through, is the National Commission on the COVID-19 Pandemic Act, which has been introduced in the Senate by a bipartisan group of senators, which is a very promising, in some ways, a very promising sign.
Very unusual.
That we have Senators Marshall and Ernst joining together with Senators Feinstein and Gillibrand in pushing this forward.
And I think Mike Blumenthal was also on as a co-sponsor, too.
What's the significance of this?
It's the first COVID commission bill introduced in the Senate that has Republicans on it, not named Susan Collins. That's significant. These are conservative Republicans. And what the bill represents is a bipartisan bargain in that the Republicans are very anxious to get a commission that will dig into the origins issue.
Right.
The Democrats understand that concern, but say, but a commission also needs to be broad scope. And Marshall and Ernst have agreed with that. And indeed, those four senators, Feinstein, Gillibrand, Marshall, Ernst, published an op-ed in the Washington Post just a few days ago laying out the case for a broad scope commission. So there are bills in the Congress. By the way, just a little more than a week ago, Tony Fauci, for the very first time, went public in saying that there needed to be a COVID commission and that it needed to be done soon. On CBS Face the Nation. That's noteworthy. So that's significant, but that bill is not likely to pass this year.
But
that bill is
signal.
Likely to be kicked over into 2022.
Yeah.
And because on both sides, there's a lot of partisan suspicion mm-hmm. and deep polarization. There are a lot of Republicans believe the Democrats just want this commission as a way to make Trump mm-hmm. look bad. Looking ahead to 2024. And so a lot of Republicans don't want a commission. Democrats are very suspicious of a commission in which Republican leaders would appoint half the members, fearing they'll turn it into another culture war theater and won't be interested in getting at the answers. And so there are a lot of problems there.
And in fairness, Senator Ernst, for instance, has said some pretty awful things about Tony Fauci with respect to the COVID origin controversy that are pretty radical.
Well, there you are.
And then so there's certainly plenty of reason to be a bit cautious.
So there's one model for a commission that is enacted by Congress in which these problems get overcome, that's bipartisan and government established, that has pros and cons. One among the cons are that it might become highly politicized because the commissioners will be appointed in a very political fashion. An alternative model for a commission is an independent commission, privately sponsored, but receiving the necessary informal support from the administration and key congressional committees so that it can be successful. But then you can put together a commission that might be more nonpartisan, but then it needs to have enough cooperation to get access to the information it will need to do its work. So both those models are out there. They each have their strengths and weaknesses. And it's not clear which model folks will go with in 2022, or they might just decide it's too hard, we can't create a commission at all. But right now, there is a lot of political interest in this idea and a lot of general sense that somehow this needs to be done. We need to find a way to do it. And our planning group is trying to help enable that.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Anthony Fauci and his recent statement, which I found very constructive. Now, the administration, President Biden's administration, understandably has been very cautious with respect to commission. Say a bit about that. And, it's been ambivalent. It's been cautious. Is opinion changing? Is there an openness? Is it tied to this acute phase in a sense of let's not get distracted, let's not get pulled away? What's your estimation of the opinion climate?
To be fair to the Biden administration, their attitude has been consistent now for nearly 6 months, which is we are heads down 24/7 trying to manage this crisis, and we're not yet ready to kind of lift up and look around and start doing retrospective lessons learned studies. We're not ready to engage the commission issue just yet because we're just too preoccupied with crisis management. And that attitude is understandable. There is an argument that as you kind of settle into a regular rhythm of how we're going to be managing this crisis, and this is going to go on for some time, then all the arguments we discussed a few minutes ago begin to kick in. The fact that Dr. Fauci is already talking publicly about this, and that the question is coming up, that the senators are writing these op-eds, it's all a sign that people do think it's about time to go ahead and lift our sights and focus on this, on the agenda for what we want to talk about in 2022. Fundamentally, don't we want to talk about how to make the country stronger so this won't happen again? And if we don't start talking about this soon, understanding that it'll take time for a commission to do its work, don't we risk just losing the window to talk about it at all?
A couple of issues here. One is on the COVID origin controversy. Let's say you set up an independent commission, or you set one up that's blessed by Congress and along the lines of the bill that we just discussed. How can you avoid, in your estimation, how can you avoid the inevitable polarizing forces that have already been unleashed around the COVID-19 origin controversy, which is you have some that are deeply anti-Chinese. There are some that are tying a critique of NIH, Echo Health Alliance. Others, you have this unresolved debate around whether the origin was through zoonotic spillover or through lab accident or research exposure. How would you manage that in order? Because that's going to be one of the biggest tasks, is to not walk away from that challenge, but not allow it to get out of control.
Yeah, and we have been managing that in the course of our planning group. Mm-hmm. And one way we've been managing it is we've been listening to people on all sides of the controversy, listening carefully. The commission has, I think, at least two big obligations with respect to this. The first is it must offer an authoritative summary of all the available evidence, open to expression of all alternative viewpoints. And by authoritative summary of available evidence, that has to include evidence in the possession of the U.S. government. That's number one. Number two, the commission has to actually channel that to look forward. to look forward, well, all right, then how should we try to prevent future pandemics? Notice that whatever your theory of how this pandemic arose, all the theories relate to theories of how to prevent future pandemics. Even in the lab leak scenario, the controversial experimental programs were actually being done to try to prevent a pandemic. So then you have to, okay, right, if you don't like those research programs or think that research is risky, then we have to work on the guidelines for different research or different kinds of zoonotic or clinical surveillance. We have to work on, if you're unhappy with the way China handled the issues of informing the world about the crisis, all right then, what's then the future approach to early detection and early warning about a global outbreak? If that system didn't work, what's the alternative system? So what the commission has to do is first provide that kind of authoritative open synthesis of the available evidence using the best talent available and open to alternative views. But second, it has to channel that to be forward-looking and try to channel all the anxiety about the origins into something that's constructive.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I think we face here is a very real possibility that this becomes a bit of a frozen conflict, not unlike sort of the end of the Soviet Union and Abkhazia, that this becomes the equivalent in global health security of Abkhazia, that we have to wait for a long time to really get resolution. The evidence isn't accumulated, can't be resolved overnight.
People think we already know all we can know. I don't think
that's
true.
So we have to figure out how to
move. There is actually more evidence that's been coming out recently, and I think more evidence is going to come out soon. By the way, the Senate Health Committee is conducting an interesting bit of work just to try to reconstruct what's known to some extent. And I think early in the new year, they'll put out a report that I think will move the ball at least a few yards forward.
Mm-hmm.
The House Intelligence Committee is also doing some useful work that hasn't been made public yet. And there are a number of avenues that can be pursued to try to learn more. But we might be at the point where people are left with unanswered or even unanswerable questions.
Yeah, I mean, that's the position we're in right now.
Right, so. And then what you do is say, okay, what then are the major possibilities? And then you work on policies that address all of them.
You mentioned excess mortality, 1 million people, recorded deaths, approaching 800,000.
People bandy about COVID-19 global numbers that are way wrong. Using excess mortality estimates, the best excess mortality estimates globally are at least in the 10 to 20 million range. Yeah. This is enormous. And at least 10 to 20 million. And by the way, that number, in my view, could easily double within the next year or two.
Yeah. So here in the United States, are we seeing a constituency form, a coherent constituency form among those who are the survivors, those who are the extended family members of those who died or who suffered severe damage from this? Is it coalescing into a constituency of some form that can be useful in advocating for a commission?
A little bit. There are some victims groups marked by COVID, led by Kristen Urquiza, for example, has mobilized around this. But in general, not so much yet. There's numbness and pain out there among many, many people that hasn't catalyzed. And some social scientists sometimes distinguish between what they call there are things that are conditions, and then there are things that become problems. That are problem. A condition is something that doesn't seem amenable to a solution.
Yeah.
It rains. It's a condition. Nothing you can do about it. What converts a condition to a problem is when people begin to imagine an agenda that addresses it, that can actually do something about it. That's actually part of what a commission is. People
right
don't
now,
have
people
a clear
are
agenda.
Overwhelmed.
Yes. And the agenda that people could mobilize around hasn't become clear. And people haven't quite made the connection. They think, oh, the commission seems like some sort of good government, virtuous thing to do. They haven't quite made the connection. The commission is a bridge. The commission is the bridge to whatever different public health system you think our country has to have coming out of a crisis like this, or the world needs to have. A lot of things, the crisis has exposed like an X-ray, every fracture and fissure in so many aspects of the American system of emergencies
and
health.
It's exposed these just profound inequities. And it seems to me that there's a deep progressive potential in all of this.
There is. The progressive movement hasn't fixed on – I mean, everyone wants to get the crisis over with. But it's interesting. The progressive agenda has mainly just been on autopilot, focused on the same issues they were focused on 2 years ago.
So why hasn't the notion of a commission caught fire with on the progressive side?
That's a good question. I think primarily because they've been conditioned for years around a certain agenda. And when Biden came into office, they were already pre-mobilized around that agenda. And they you know, launched that train in that direction, and that train, by God, is going to steam to its destination. 2022 should be the point at which the movement for reform moves to, God, we need to develop an agenda around the crisis we're in, the crisis that has so ravaged the communities we care about.
Omicron, obviously we're in the middle of this unfolding, 17 states in the United States. We don't, you know, we're racing ahead with genomic sequencing to try and get a clearer picture, but we're playing catch up. And we're in the midst of a major wave now that's Delta-driven, right? We're up to an average daily case count of over 116,000. Our death rate's pretty stable at 1,000 to 1,200 a day. And we're at the early part of this wave. Now, Omicron has appeared. It's tearing up the turf in South Africa. That we're seeing almost vertical escalation. We don't know if that translates into other settings. Global markets are very volatile and uncertain. People are asking whether this is going to change the economic recovery, the desire to taper down the stimulus packages and move towards control of inflation. And so there's, everything's been sort of thrown open. How does this impact what you're trying to do with the commission? Give you a bounce?
Oh, it seems so incongruous to talk about, you know, getting a bounce from a global tragedy. What I think it underscores is that this is not just some passing thunderstorm. This is now a continuing global challenge, and the institutional weaknesses in coping with this are just more and more evident. Yeah. That in a way, if you thought, well, I had my one cause solution, the crisis is Trump's fault, the crisis is this or that, or it's we clearly need some stronger institutions, including globally, that simply don't exist now. And we might as well get cracking on them while the crisis is raging and people are dying and see if we can do better. I was on a call with an influential member of Congress this morning who wanted to know what else could we do on the global stage now in light of this. And actually, my colleagues and I think we had some constructive ideas to suggest about the way to think about vaccines a little differently than we have. Ways to think about therapeutics, which have been underemphasized actually in the way we've invested our funds. Ways to think about global coordination of these investments and the management of supply chains rather than a lot of disconnected national policies. There's just a lot more that can be done that we're not now doing, and the commission can help mobilize action to deal with continuing crisis.
Thank you. Let's get to the question we ask every person that comes on as our guest here. We've asked this of you earlier, and maybe your answer now will be a slightly different than 6 months ago. But as you're sitting here today, end of this year, in the midst of this pretty turbulent moment, this pivot moment that we're in here, what gives you the greatest hope and greatest optimism?
Actually, the talent I see around me, including among our advisors, including among people like you, Steve. Talent and commitment is just extraordinary. And our science is extraordinary, really remarkable, which is one of the interesting things about this crisis. This is not, in 1918, we didn't have the science. In 2021, we have the science. The problem is the institutions to apply it. We have the talent, we have the science. The challenge is we haven't organized ourselves to actually harness all that talent and that scientific potential, but that's there. And there are so many people who are eager to help. That's one of the most gratifying experiences I've had in this whole process. Someone asked me, well, if the commission doesn't get established, will you feel terribly disappointed? From a public point of view, a civic point of view, yes. But at a personal level, It's been so enormously enriching to get to know the people I've got to know. People have been so eager to help and cooperate in this process. All of us who've been involved in this have been struck by the readiness of people from all sorts of areas, nurses, doctors, victims' families, to come together constructively and work on this. In other words, that talent and interest in America is there. And what a commission can do is remind people, you know what? Americans can come together around the cause of competent problem solving, not just around the cause of culture wars and turning all problems into poses. If you give us a problem and give people the chance to solve it, Americans are willing to tackle it across all sorts of beliefs.
Thank you. That's really eloquent. Thank you for your leadership and congratulations on what you've been able to achieve over the course of this year. It's really quite impressive, and you've made a major contribution. Whether we move ahead with a commission or not, but I'm pretty confident we will eventually see this.
Thank you, Steve.
Coronavirus Crisis Update is produced by Liz Pulver. You can find our full catalog of podcasts, including Pandemic Planet and AIDS Existential Moment, on our homepage at csis.org/podcasts.